This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is this the month to spend $4 trillion to shore up infrastructure and other weaknesses in the U.S. economy? I'm David Brancaccio. The Biden administration spent August focused on pulling the U.S. military out of Afghanistan and attempting to quell the Delta variant. Now it's September. The White House is hoping to turn to its economic agenda. Marketplace's Andy Euler's on the line with more of those priorities.
Yeah, that's right, David. The White House is looking to pass more than $4 trillion in domestic spending, which that includes that bipartisan infrastructure bill that Biden is arguing is even more pressing after Hurricane Ida devastated the Gulf Coast and left some of the Northeast flooded. Now, he approved major disaster declarations up north, and he's also touring the damage in New York and New Jersey today. And you know that he's going to be pushing that Build Back Better agenda in the process, right?
And the bulk of the spending would come as a budget reconciliation package, it's called, with a price tag of some $3.5 trillion with a T, but it sounds like some are worried about spending too much.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That spending would effectively direct toward different social programs, things like family services, health, lots of environmental programs. Now, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, he's a pivotal Democrat whose vote is key to getting anything through the Senate. He's already said that he's worried about the government racking up so much debt. But the Biden team is confident that he's going to be persuaded. Now, Biden's also continued to argue for a higher corporate tax rate to help pay for community college, paid family leave, the expansion of a child tax credit as well.
But in terms of capturing the spotlight, Afghanistan and pandemic, these are not going away.
That's exactly right. They're not. And it's really Biden's hope that he can shift focus to his economic priorities. But that could be easier said than done, especially after two important pieces of the COVID-19 relief package just ran out. The federal moratorium on evictions is over. And just yesterday, almost 9 million people lost their unemployment benefits.
All right. Marketplace's Andy Euler, thank you. The surprise remains, but analysts have now had 4 days to digest the news from just before the weekend that just 235,000 more people were hired on in August. That is a third of the hiring the experts were expecting. Given some time for reflection, let's consult Paul Christopher, head of Global Market Strategy for the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You know, I'm still stuck on Friday, to be honest with you. I know I'm in the news business, but that payroll report covering August came in so light. There were a lot of hot takes. You've had a number of days now to consider this. What do you think was going on there?
Sure, it was a very disappointing at the top line report, but we think there's some signs of strength underlying, and it might be a reason why stocks haven't sold off by more and why rates might still have some upward momentum to them. Some of that strength is deceptive. You had the government and education jobs not really posting very strong gains, but seasonally they should have. And so that sort of weighed on the seasonal adjusted number. And of course, you have some weakness on the services side. There's been a big pickup in COVID, and you've seen people sort of pull back on dining and restaurants. But we think you'll end up seeing stronger labor reports. There are going to be months where either the seasonal factors or COVID or other factors might dent that top line number a little bit. But we're still seeing really good signs that people who had been out of the labor force are getting back into the labor force. And so a lot of that slack, we think, is going to get taken up in the months ahead, just as we saw in this report.
I suppose that may be playing into the sentiment on the bond market this morning. The 10-year yield is up this morning, 1.37%. That would suggest a little bit of a stronger view of the road ahead.
Yes, it would. And we also have to keep an eye on that one and the inflation expectations, because inflation has remained strong even as growth has pulled back a little bit. And that's a sign that that the bond market may be starting to pay attention We do think inflation will decelerate next year and growth will pick up again. And their coincidence at this point in time, higher inflation and slower growth, not an indication of some structural weakness in the economy, but just a particular coincidence of facts that these supply shortages, not only creating higher price pressures, but also leaving people really without goods to buy. But as those supply disruptions correct themselves, you'll see inflation coming down, and then you'll see people being able to buy more things, and then growth will pick up again.
Paul Christopher at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute, the head of global market strategy there. Thank you so much.
All right.
Pandemic distortions have been driving up the costs of raw materials far and wide, especially construction materials. We're tracking a new spike in the worldwide price of aluminum after the military seized power in the West African country of Guinea on Sunday. Yesterday, that metal hit its highest price in a decade. It's up again this morning. Guinea produces a lot of bauxite, which you need to make aluminum. My marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, has been following this story from London.
Hi, David. Good morning.
Tell me more about the wider effects as events unfold in Guinea.
Well, there are a few issues here. One is whether Guinea's borders will stay open. The military had closed off land and air borders temporarily on Sunday as they took control of the country. Obviously, if those borders aren't open, both people and goods can't get in or out. The second issue here is whether the military will honor existing mining and export contracts for bauxite, which, as you said, is used to make aluminum and iron ore. Guinea is one of the world's biggest suppliers of the mineral, so any disruption could cause issues for all of those global supply chains.
But supplies out of Guinea aren't the only reason that aluminum is through the roof.
Exactly. So the price has jumped about 40% so far this year. And this morning, I spoke with Capital Economics chief commodities economist Caroline Bain. She told me the move higher this year is in large part because the global economy recovery sparked a surge in demand for aluminum and the products made from it. But there have been concerns that China, which is the biggest producer of aluminum, won't be able to keep up with that demand.
The latest rise in the aluminium price has been because of power rationing in a couple of Chinese provinces, which has meant that aluminium supply has been curbed. But they are actually very small producers of aluminium. And the bigger picture is that aluminium production in China is still rising, despite these well-publicized closures.
So, Victoria, does it look like these supply curbs in China or the conflict in Guinea will add up to long-term stress on supply chains? I mean, aluminium is everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Well, according to Bain, no. She said unless the problems in Guinea cause major disruptions to bauxite exports, her view is that China has enough of it stockpiled that it will last a while. And she sees power rationing in China as a temporary measure. The one caveat, though, could be if the Chinese government decides to enact further curbs on output for environmental reasons. And we've seen that already on steel manufacturers in China. But Bain said since aluminum is such a key industry for the nation's economy, she doesn't see authorities targeting it in the same way as it has steel.
Marketplace's Victoria Craig, also BBC in London. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
El Salvador today became the first country to recognize Bitcoin as legal tender. The government has bought millions of dollars worth of the digital currency and put in 200 Bitcoin conversion machines. The BBC's David Bamford has more.
Under a law which came into effect at midnight local time, businesses in El Salvador are obliged to accept Bitcoin as payment alongside the US dollar, the country's other official currency. President Nayib Bukele said the move will fuel the economy and make it easier and cheaper for Salvadorans working abroad to send money home. But analysts say many local people have expressed skepticism, saying they neither understand nor trust Bitcoin, which can wildly fluctuate in value. The World Bank and IMF have also expressed doubts.
That is David Bamford with our editorial partner, the BBC. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.